You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense. Stay within your limits. Go to GameSense.AB.ca. And we go in the room today, very fitting, as we are joined by Rick Westhead, of course, one of the best investigative journalists in the country. Has got a new book come out, We Breed Lions, A Journey into the Heart of Hockey's Reckoning. And, you know, it talks about the triumphs of Canadian hockey, as well as its toxicity and the capacity for change. And Rick joins us now. Rick, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good, thanks.
Rick, I read the book, and I thought it was very well done in, because I saw online people like, oh, you're only talking about the bad things in hockey. I'm like, well, no, read the book. I know that you'd put it out there the other day. It was one of the titles and talked about how, you know, making a reference to how some hockey teams treat hotel rooms. And I think that's true. And at the same time, I'm reading that, I'm like, yeah, but I know as a coach in U13, that's unacceptable. And we don't do that. And the kids have a great time. So like anything in society, we have good and bad. And in hockey, we're going to have good and bad. And I thought the book wasn't just about the bad. It does talk about the good of it. And I really like the capacity for change factor. How do you think it happens?
Well, I think, first of all, thanks for having me on to talk about this for a bit. Because you're right. Hockey is an amazing game. I love it. I play it 3 or 4 times a week. You know, some of the best friends I have are through hockey. I coach my son playing hockey all through minor hockey. When he was fighting cancer in the middle of the pandemic, our hockey community was there for us every day. But, you know, Jason, two things can be true. You can have a sport that's so amazing, and you can still have so deeply entrenched systemic problems, the kind of problems that Sheldon Kennedy, even up till today, says are real and current. So, you know, I think what this takes to change is a commitment from minor hockey and junior hockey organizations to, you know, really face some uncomfortable truths and do it differently. One example of that, I was in Hamilton, Ontario, and watched the Hamilton Steel AAA program and the Hamilton Huskies program. They've partnered with an organization called Coaching Boys into Men. And so the hockey coaches there with 16 different teams are getting training about how to talk to their players about issues of consent and healthy masculinity, basically how to treat each other like humans. And I sat in on some of these talks with kids who aren't even teenagers yet and just was blown away at how much the kids actually wanted to talk about this. And it made me wonder, where else are they having these kinds of conversations? Are the parents talking to them about this? And of course they should, but many parents simply don't talk to their kids about issues of consent, just they don't. Are they happening in school, these conversations? And I think the answer there is no as well. So maybe hockey has the capacity to be kind of part of our society where we really are, in through the sport, helping young boys become the best versions of themselves as they turn into young men.
I think that's well said, because, you know, I think people at times they get defensive. I understand they're like, oh, they're attacking my game. I love my game. And we got a lot of problems in society. And I agree. But there's lots of people that follow hockey. And so why not be the leader? Why not just sit back and say, well, it's other places, so it doesn't mean we have to clean up your own backyard, but then be the leader so it spreads out. And I think that's what hockey has the capacity to do.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, and there will be people who say, well, this is not a hockey problem, it's a societal problem. And there's truth in that. But you know what? When we see issues like this, you know, imagine going through the stuff at Michigan State with Larry Nassar and having people say, I don't want to focus on Larry Nassar. Let's just talk about all the good coaches at Michigan State, or the football program at Penn State with Jerry Sandusky. I don't want to talk about that. Let's just talk about all the good, right? Like, we have to confront these things, because if we don't, they keep happening. And we've been here before. When Sheldon Kennedy came out with his story in the 1990s, Jason, there were so many promises of reform. It can never happen again, both from hockey organizations and from different levels of our government. And guess what? The news cycle moved on. The story and promises got forgotten. And it wasn't long before there were, you know, other instances of abuse in junior hockey that maybe with better screening processes, maybe if the promises had been followed through on, you know, maybe some of those might have been avoided.
Well, that it's, I remember when Sheldon came, like, the amount of pushback, and sadly it still exists today, right? It takes a lot of courage to want to stand up and push back against something that is, deeply ingrained in society and in some dressing rooms in hockey.
Yeah, sure. But this is also, that's part of the bargain, right? I don't worry about the blowback. Sheldon Kennedy says there are systemic issues now, and he has the receipts to back it up, you know, and the book documents that. If you want to disagree with me, fine. If you want to disagree with Sheldon Kennedy, fine.
Yeah.
Again, this is how it goes. It reminds me a little bit of back in 2001. And at the time, the Boston Globe blew the lid off of this scandal within the Catholic Church in that city.
Yes.
They reported extensively about how priests were being moved around between parishes after they were accused of sexually assaulting children. And the response was not from the church was not to say, you're right, we've got to fix this immediately. The immediate response, if you go back and look at the news coverage, one of the most prominent members of the church, a cardinal in Boston, called for the wrath of God to come down on the media. You know, there were others within the community that said, why do you have to focus on the bad stories? Why can't we talk about all the good that the church does? Does this sound familiar?
Oh, yes. 100%. Yes, you can. Two things can happen at the same time. There can be lots of good people in hockey and still lots of systemic bad problems that need to be discussed.
Yeah, and these players, listen, these are not only historical problems. And by the way, I'm not writing this book because I was cut from any minor hockey team when I was a kid. But listen, the truth is the stories are current. I made a point to interview. I reached out to more than 200 players on Instagram who'd played either who'd been drafted into the Canadian Hockey League within the last 10 years. And of those players, I interviewed 58. And those 58 players, the kind of the line through all of their stories was how much they loved the game. But all of them, to a person, identified cultural issues off the ice that were challenging. You know, this pressure to conform, you know, the pressure, what does it mean to be a 14, 15, 16-year-old boy moving away from your parents into a billet home hundreds of kilometers away and playing on a team where there are 20-year-olds or older,
yeah,
right? That pressure to be accepted in that room is intense, and the players were really candid about it with me.
Yeah, well, I could imagine that because, you know, if you have a good room and a good leader, it can be great. If you don't, like, what's your options at that point as a 16-year-old?
No, and you said it. And there are players, you've read the book, you know. There are players in this book that say that, thank God, they wound up with a team,
yes,
where the leaders in the room were people who made good decisions.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are also cases where that doesn't happen. And here's the problem. Far too often, when there are issues like this, the people who are in charge of these hockey programs, who tend to be former hockey players themselves, the immediate response is all about brand reputation, right? Protect the crest, protect the name of the organization. And we saw that all the way up till Hockey Canada. It's only because of the journalism over the last couple of years that we've learned that Hockey Canada, for decades, maintained this secret slush fund that was used to pay off sexual assault allegations. And that slush fund was built using minor hockey registrations without parents being told where that money was going, right? So from top down, the response through the years has been to keep things quiet, to turn to non-disclosure agreements, etc. And I think we're at a point now where there's a number of people who want to talk about this and want to fix this game because it's a great game that should be made as safe as it can be so that parents, when they're dropping their kids off at the rink, know, hey, I have every confidence that these teams are doing everything they can to make my kids safe.
Rick Westhead joins us. If you want to read his book, you can get it now. It's called We Breed Lions. It's an in-depth look into hockey's culture. You know, it does talk about the great parts of it, but just isn't blind to the areas that need to improve. And Rick, I coach U13. I can tell you, I'm at that point where, you know what, you want the dressing room. I remember when I played, you know, boys joke around, and luckily I never played in an environment that had, I never had any negative experiences in my life. You know, the worst hazing that I remember was they were gonna shave your pubes at the time, and I fought back, and it, luckily one of our leaders on the team said, we ain't doing that, it's over, and that was the end of it. And looking back, I was like, nowadays it's funny because half of society publicly grooms themselves anyway. So I look and say, you know what, hey, maybe they're ahead of their time. I say it jokingly, but luckily I never had to go through anything bad. But I'm aware that lots of people did. I've talked to lots of guys who have, and it's not good. And I think we're naive to think it doesn't happen because we just saw a case of it in Ontario that happened here. Like, it still exists. What in all your conversations, and you talk to lots of different communities, whether it's hockey, any sport really, it doesn't have to be hockey, I think, in any dressing room, what's the best way to address it and monitor it so it doesn't happen in your team?
Well, I mean, I think you've got to get buy-in from the coaches that this is a real problem, right? Like, one of the stories in this book that I talk about is with a player named Marcus Patterson, who played Junior A in Ontario, and he sat down in a restaurant with his father and me, and for the first time told his dad that in the 2019 season, when he played Junior A, that he had to go through the hot box. So for people who don't know, this is where, you know, you're a first-year player, you're on a road trip together early in the season, and somebody taps the first-year guys on the shoulders, says, go to the back of the bus. And when they get there, they're told to strip. And after they strip, they're told to get in the bathroom. So you have five or six, you know, 16, 17-year-olds jammed together in this bathroom. The lights are turned off. There's some coins thrown through a vent. And they're told, you can't get out of there until you give us this exact, you know, amount of money back. Well, don't tell me that those sorts of things are happening without the knowledge of the coach, who's sitting like 10 or 15 rows away, right? So the first thing we have to do is really have coaches understand that this is unacceptable. And by the way, like, Jason, what's your perspective on this? Like, in what way is that hot box experience team building? How does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's funny because I can say I actually was on, I remember in junior football, they had it for rookies. What they had to do was they fit, you know, three, four rookies in the bathroom and they had their underwear on, but they had to try to get dressed in there. And that was it. Like, nothing bad. And the players kind of laughed because you had to work as a team to try to get one guy dressed. And once he was dressed, then you could have the other guy dressed. But there was nothing like derogatory. There's no touching, nothing like that. And that to me, players kind of thought it was funny because you had to work as a team to figure it out because you didn't have a lot of space and how you would help Bob get his shirt on while you were trying to, you know, pull your sweatpants on. So I think there are things you can do, yes, but the hot boxing one is, I've heard way worse stories. I remember the puck on the string and stupid things like that. So, and I do think coaches, I think the problem is, and especially now with phones, like on my team, phones aren't allowed in the room. And I know a lot of associations have banned them because I know adults do stupid stuff with phones. We think that young boys whose frontal lobe isn't fully developed are going to make good decisions if you put them in a pack mentality in the room. They're going to look at stuff that they shouldn't be looking at. They're going to say stuff, and it's going to lead to more problems.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. It is going to lead to more problems. But the other challenging part of this is just getting people to be willing to talk about it. It's so uncomfortable. It's an unpleasant topic. Like, look around. You tell me how many media who cover hockey want to have these kinds of conversations, want to talk about what happened in the trial, want to ask players, hey, what's your perspective on taking consent videos after you saw what happened at the trial in London? Do you see any media that really want to tackle this and take that on?
Yeah. Well, hey, I went there, Rick. I've talked. People get upset. I a lot of times in human nature, and I know the adage is, well, it's sports and sports is my escape. And I'm like, well, I understand that. But you can't escape if people are getting abused physically, sexually, emotionally. If we escape it, it just becomes more of a problem. And it's not talking about it once isn't going to fix it. That's the challenge here. It has to be ongoing. And, like, do you think Hockey Canada, who's at the top, who oversees everything, will actually do enough to start the change?
I think there's work to do there. Like, right now, you mentioned a story I did last week about, you know, this situation with a minor hockey team in Ontario. Mm-hmm. It was a AA U14 team where players, the coaches were supposed to be in the room as per Hockey Canada policy, but they weren't. And so what happened was it was sort of Lord of the Flies in there. And you had players watching the door to make sure nobody was coming in. And then you had some guys, like, holding down their teammates, pulling down their pants, pulling down their underwear, taking pictures of their genitals and posting it on the group chat. A group chat that was filled with racist and homophobic slurs. So ultimately, the coach of that team was suspended for 6 months. And Hockey Canada, still to this day, has made the choice to keep those sorts of sanctions secret. And other organizations like Athletics Canada, like Gymnastics Canada, even provincial federations like the Ontario Volleyball Association believe that it's in the public interest to make this public. They believe that the right, that a parent's right to know if they're dropping their kids off with somebody who's been suspended for months for misconduct, that that right is more important than the worry that you might get sued by somebody for publishing their name because they've done something that has seen them get suspended for so long. So you asked me, like, where are we, what's to do, or where do we go from here? I think Hockey Canada's board, and I think it's part of the role of journalists to hold that organization accountable, to answer questions about how you defy keeping that kind of information secret from Canadians still.
Rick, in the writing of the book, and I don't like to go too in-depth because I want people to read the book. I really like the book. I highly recommend it. I think every coach, I don't care what level you coach at, because you might be coaching U9 now, but if you want to keep growing as a coach, you're going to be coaching U13, so you want to prepare yourself for it. I recommend every coach of any sport should read this because there's lots I learned to say, okay, you know what? Maybe I got to ask myself, look in the mirror. Am I doing this right? Am I making sure? And I'm pretty adamant with my coaches. I have team meetings all the time. This is what we do. And you set the boundary for your players. And I want the boys to have fun. Like, you can still have fun, right, with just having guidelines. And I think it helps. But when you wrote all this, was there anything, and you've been doing this for a long time, was there anything that you uncovered that surprised you while writing this book?
Oh, boy. I mean, I guess one of the things that surprised me was just how willing players were to talk to me about this, right? Like, you know, Curtis Gabriel, a former NHL player, willing to put his name next to his story, which is about the pressure he felt as a first-year junior player to have sex and about how commoditized, how much of a transaction that was. And he told me about just the how often the conversations are and the pressure that players are under that way. And he talked about what that has meant to him over the years, how that has affected him mentally. And he wasn't the only one. You know, there are so many stories in here from players who are on the record. And I think maybe that's one of the things that surprised me the most, was that this is not a book that's full of pseudonyms and players who are like, don't use my name. It surprised me how many men I talked to who said, this has got to change. And it's going to add to the credibility of this reporting if you include my name in this, and please do it.
Well, that to me, like, that's the part of this. Like, I look at Hockey Canada and that coach gets suspended for 6 months. That just bothers me. I'm like, what do you mean 6 months? Like, I think it should be a multi-year suspension. And because that's a right and it's a privilege to be able to be a minor coach. And if you don't take it serious, then you shouldn't have the right to do it. That's just my thoughts on it. And when I saw that suspension, I kind of was like, oh, God, like, you know what? Does the person even learn from it? All right. And do they have to take some courses before they come back in, you know, to be able to coach again? Right. Just because to be suspended and not have to do anything about it, I'm not sure you actually learn from it. Right. Like, would Hockey Canada have that type of power? Because I know they have some coaching things like respect in sport, and you got to do all that stuff online. You know, we could have a whole discussion, you know, how beneficial some of those things are. But do you think Hockey Canada and you know, volleyball and basketball and any of these other sports, could they have a stronger hand in discipline?
I think so. And I think it's on the government because these organizations receive our money, because they receive taxpayer dollars. Our government, our federal government and our provincial governments, for provincial federations, they have leverage here. They have the leverage to say, hey, if you want to keep getting a handout from the government every year, these are the policies that you have to introduce. And just so we're clear, I'm not talking about, you know, every coach who's slipped up and used the F word in a practice or something like that. I'm not saying like name and shame everything like that, but there has to be, in my mind, some threshold where if you've acted in a way that, you know, I don't know what the line is. Like, let's leave this to people who are smarter than I am on this topic.
Okay.
But there should be some division between saying, hey, you know, this coach swore during a practice.
Yes.
As opposed to somebody who has you know, been clearly negligent, right?
Yes.
And I think that's an important distinction to make too.
Well, it's funny you say that, Rick, because when we look in society, I believe one of our biggest problems now is we've made everything sexual assault. They don't use rape anymore. They don't use that term. And where if someone slaps me on the butt, that's sexual assault compared to raping someone. And I think they're two very different things. And I think by putting it all in one, you weaken the worst, right? It softens people to the worst part of it. And so I agree with you on this. You can't, hey, you swear as a coach, you shouldn't 100%, but that's very different than allowing, physical or verbal abuse going on in your dressing room. They're two totally different things. And I hope that they do have those type of limitations and just be very specific. This is what happened. Right. And honestly, if a coach swears once, like any parent out there is like, okay, hands up if I've never sworn in front of my kids accidentally. If you have, you're a way better parent than I am. Because
I was going to say, I think as well, like hockey has to figure this out. Right. We keep talking about how Canada, our demographics of our country is changing. It's already changed. Like, take a look at the numbers, right, of new Canadians and what our country, who makes up our country now. Look at sports like soccer and basketball and volleyball, right? There are a lot of choices that parents have. And the number of folks, one of the other things I talk about in this book that we haven't touched on yet is the commercialization of minor hockey, right? Look how expensive, if your kid is playing elite AAA hockey, parents know how many thousands of dollars that takes every year for everything from, you know, coaches for edge work to, you know, shooting to, you know, like all of the different things. It can be a money pit. Yeah. And so hockey has to figure this out because we've got the World Cup coming next year. Soccer's already super popular and it's only going to get more popular. There's a lot of competition, that hockey's facing now.
Rick, a fantastic book. I really appreciate it, and I couldn't recommend it more to anybody who's definitely a parent, but you're a coach because you're a little bit more of a position of influence and power in minor sports, and there's lots of good things to take away as a coach to ensure that you're doing your best, that these type of things don't happen under your watch. Yeah. So great job.
Yeah, great interview. Thanks, Jason.